Crane was known to the world as the quipping colonel on TV's Hogan's Heroes. Then the laughter died. Crane was found beaten to death.
Bob Crane was the star of the popular 60s TV show Hogan's Heroes, which borrowed from the premise of the film Stalag 17 and put a group of Allied prisoners of war in a German camp. Unlike Stalag 17, Hogan's was a comedy with a laugh track. Crane played Colonel Hogan, the charming leader of the POWs, who baffled and fooled the Germans who were holding him.
Yeah, Colonel. You all know each other?
Major Hoople is a very good friend of ours.
Major who?
Not who, Hoople. Has trouble with names sometimes.
Hogan?
That's my first name, Hogan. Hogan Hoople.
Hogan's was the highlight of Crane's career. When the program went off the air in 1971, Crane moved on to guest spots on other shows and starred in a couple of films. He was largely out of the public consciousness by 1978 when he was doing dinner theater around the country, including in Scottsdale, where he was murdered. Crane's death was investigated deeply, and a trial was held 16 years later in 1994. The accused murderer and friend of Crane's was John Carpenter. He was acquitted, and the case was considered unsolved. The two had bonded over videotaping in its commercial infancy at that point. Crane was an early adopter of recording sexual encounters, and some thought it was that which ultimately led to his death. Recently, journalist John Hook of KSAZ Channel 10 in Phoenix decided to reinvestigate the case and see if he could find out who actually murdered Bob Crane. He has a new book as well. It's called Who Killed Bob Crane? The Final Close-Up, and John Hook is with me. John, it seems like the 1994 Crane trial would have been a national phenomenon given his fame, except it was eclipsed by the O.J. Simpson murder trial. Is that right?
That is exactly right. It would have been front page every day, but O.J. was happening. Now, there's a couple of things about that that play into this. DNA was coming into prominence in the O.J. Simpson trial. This greatly affected the jury here in the John Carpenter trial when he went on trial in 1994. The jury wanted ironclad proof that blood found in John Carpenter's car, which was found a day after the murder, tested for blood, came back B positive, found in only 9% of the population. Bob Crane happened to be type B positive. You can imagine, he is vaulted to the very top of the suspect list. Because of the strange relationship with Crane, the odd relationship, and then blood found in his rental car a day after the murder, he becomes a prime suspect. Some would say at the exclusion of all others. Cops would disagree with that and say, look, we interviewed a lot of people, but all roads led back to Carpenter. That trial would have been front page, but OJ complicated it. The jury wanted DNA to say that blood in Carpenter's car was not just type B, Bob Crane's blood type, but that it was Bob Crane's blood. That's what the jury wanted, and they didn't get it because all the DNA at that point, up to that point, was inconclusive, and the jury really got hung up on that.
Going back again to the late 70s, the Scottsdale PD was tiny, and Scottsdale was not used to dealing with murder cases, let alone a high-profile murder case.
You know, it's interesting. They've been much maligned throughout the history of this case. I have a little different take on it. Okay. They actually were averaging a few murders a year in Scottsdale, so they were dealing with murders. They even had, I think they had several that summer, maybe two or three, aside from Crane. They were dealing with murder cases. This one just, there was so much attention, magnification of coverage, that every misstep, and there were many, some not by Scottsdale police, but by the medical examiner who contaminated the crime scene, shaving Crane's head in his bed when he was discovered on June 29th, 1978, the day of the murder. There were missteps. I don't think a lot of these things fundamentally changed the conclusion they arrived at.
Mm-hmm. So, John, coming back to your interest in wanting to look into this further, was this something that had been around for a few years and you were thinking, I'd love to get another crack at this? Or to be cynical, was it November sweeps and Fox 10 wanted some ratings?
I'll tell you, it was a confluence of things. Really, it was an interview with Bob Crane's son, who wrote the foreword for my book. Bob Crane Jr. wrote the foreword for the book. I met him in March of 2015. He came to the station, did an interview with me about a book he had written about his father. Mm-hmm. After meeting Bob, you could feel the loss a son feels for, he was very close to his father. They were actually living together in an apartment at the time his father was murdered. That sense that he had no answers after all these years, no definitive answers about who killed his father. He had theories. And so I was stewing over this for several days after the interview. It was kind of sticking with me. And I started thinking, I wonder what happened to all that evidence. what happened to all that evidence in that case? I wonder if it's still around. Mm-hmm. And the first guy I called with this crazy idea was Bob Crane Jr. I said, I've got an idea, but I need your blessing on it. I want to make sure you're comfortable with it. And I laid it out for him, and there was silence on the other end of the phone. And I thought I had offended him. Mm-hmm. He said, my God, are you kidding? Are you serious? Do you think that could be done? I said, Bob, I would love to give it a try if I can find it. He said, go, do it, do it.
John, was the result not there because of, you know, people are going to say 40 years old. Was stuff tainted?
There was a blood sample from Bob Crane taken at his autopsy. There was a blood sample taken from John Carpenter, who agreed to give it when he was here in Scottsdale for an interview on July 1st, I believe, 1978. They're inside plastic bags. The county attorney's office treated this as any other cold case. All this evidence was there. The blood in Carpenter's car that was on vinyl on the car door, they had cut those strips away, tested them four times for DNA in the 80s and 90s before the trial, got an inconclusive result, which was problematic at the trial. So we had those vinyl cuttings and felt cuttings from the middle of the door, decorative felt in the middle of the door of the Chrysler Cordoba that had a blood stain in the upper right corner. The blood had been washed away after all these rounds of testing. All that was left, we felt then at that point, was perhaps cellular material left behind. So we had the county attorney's office send it to Bodie Selmark Forensics in Lorton, Virginia. As for your question about contamination, yes, that's possible. And here's why. In 78, when they took these cuttings, these techs typically weren't even wearing gloves back then. You could end up on that sample having tech DNA. Because DNA has become so sensitive, the testing, you could actually end up with DNA on that door from the guy who manufactured the car door. Mm-hmm. We got DNA. It just did not match Carpenter or Crane. It was from an unidentified male. And then a secondary profile, too degraded to reach any conclusions. After analyzing that from some other people who've looked at it, they don't believe that that secondary profile, partial, is Crane either.
So the TV special that you did for Fox 10, you had for the end of the program, sort of the unveiling,
we
the
call
reveal.
It the great reveal.
Okay. So former county attorney Rick Romley was there.
Right.
Barry Vassal of Scottsdale PD was there. Bob Crane Jr. was there. Someone from the jury.
Michael
was there.
Lake, the jury foreman.
And then also the Avila, the defense attorney,
Stephen
was
Avila.
Via satellite.
Right.
John, did you know what the outcome was going to be?
Oh, yes. I knew the outcome.
Okay.
And they knew I knew the outcome.
Oh, all right.
The reason I wouldn't reveal it was because I was so afraid of leaks.
So, John, what was the atmosphere? Was it deflating for, you know, Bob Crane Jr.? You have this close relationship. You guys have developed a friendship. Was he just, you want to know. You don't want inconclusiveness. You want to know.
Exactly. He told me, and he says in the foreword in the book, that he felt that if we could move the ball down the field at all or uncover new information, he thought it was worth doing. Mm. He knew we did our level best to try to get a final answer. We got an answer. It just isn't what everyone expected. Everyone expected that that was going to come back, Crane's blood in Carpenter's car, case closed. Mm-hmm. It just didn't happen that way.
I've been following this case forever.
Sure.
Talked to a couple of prosecutors, and they were just beside themselves. They were saying, there is absolutely no question in our minds, after all the interviews we did, after all the investigation we did, that Carpenter did it. So
I know. And that's what I heard the whole way.
What do you believe?
Well, I'll put it this way. In the book, I leave it up to the reader, but I think all roads lead to John Carpenter. The question is, this result is quirky. It bothers me on a couple of levels because, number one, if that were Crane's blood in the car, and we do this highly sensitive DNA testing, wouldn't you get something from Bob Crane? Something. We got nothing from Bob Crane. Nothing matching Crane.
Yeah.
That gives me pause.
Well, John Hook is the anchor from Fox 10. He's on every weeknight, and he has written the book, Who Killed Bob Crane? The Final Close-Up. John, thanks so much.
I appreciate it, Steve.